This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
Discover more of our shows at soundrebel.co.uk.
Hiya, babe.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Do you know what? I am feeling fabulous today. I am ready for the summer. The sun is shining. It might be absolutely freezing, -5 outside, but that sun is in the sky. And we are nearly getting in them beer gardens.
Well, look at you. You've had your eyebrows done and everything, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I had my first beauty appointment after 4 months of not being able to go. And I had a bit of a reaction to the wax. So if you've seen me, and I I've got third degree burns across my face. But I've now officially got 2 eyebrows instead of 1 for the first time. Helga is dead and buried.
Colin the caterpillar is gone.
What have you been up to this week, my angel?
Well, Joe, we had history in Liverpool because a woman won the Grand National.
Amazing.
I went to a Grand National party in a back garden. We got suited up. We watched the race. It was actually quite emotional because it was like a big thing for a woman to win.
Yeah.
It was like amazing. And I was in Vogue. Babe, weekends don't get better than Grand National. And I was in the Vogue. Someone has wrote about me in Vogue. Can we say that again? Just say it. With the, let your body move to the music. Yes, me.
Most exciting thing that's happened to me is like, instead of going to Asda, I went to Big Tesco to treat myself. And you've been in the fucking Vogue.
Hey, babe, I'm pinching myself. I can't even believe it. I'm like, what's going on?
Is that why you've got that cloak on and them stilettos?
Well, babe, yeah.
You can't see now, but Richie's got a full set of extensions.
Hey, it was just a little finger thrown on. Now I'm the style icon. I just thought, you know, I've got to start acting the part.
Oh, yeah. Anna Wintour.
Anyway, I think she's in the waiting room.
Let's go.
I am so excited for this week. Not only is this our final episode of the season, and it has been an incredible season, we are finishing off. Do you know what, right? This is like a dream for me because I was a huge, massive, massive fan. The Scousers love them. We have only got Adele from Bewitched with us today.
Hey, baby.
What is the story? How are you guys?
How are you?
Well, I'm very grateful for that intro. Wow. Thanks. You can come again.
Well, do you know what, right? I was gutted because you done Bongo's Bingo in Liverpool, yeah. Didn't you? On St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, how are we missing C'est la vie, Paddy's Day? And they're on a Bongo's Bingo.
Where were you? You never bothered turning up?
God knows, but we are so glad you're here now and we've turned up. Adele, you're doing a podcast at the minute, aren't you, called Starting Over?
Yeah, I am with the girls. So throughout the lockdown, the girls and I were just really missing each other and missing kind of seeing each other and getting together. And also just hearing all the stories about people really struggling and knowing that everyone is going to have to start over again in some way, shape or form when this is all over or even in the middle of it all. In fact, so many of my friends, their businesses have had to find new faces and new ways throughout this whole pandemic. And it's been absolutely mental. So the girls and I decided, we have been through so many circumstances where we've started over in one way, shape or form in so many different forms of life. So we thought, actually, we'll just get on the podcast and talk it through really honestly so people can hear that we go through some, if I'm allowed to say it, shit too. You come out the other side and you find the light at the end of the tunnel, no matter what you're doing. So we wanted to share our stories with that, really.
The podcast is quite like, it's really, really open, isn't it? Like, you are very like bare all sorts of things. Did you find that quite like gut-wrenching before you started it, like a bit nerve-wracking to kind of be so open?
We're quite oversharing with each other anyway, so I think it was quite funny because when we get on with each other, we're very, very open with each other, and I guess you kind of forget that you're sharing it with the world as well. But I don't mind. I don't mind people knowing my good stuff, my bad stuff, my positive, my negative. And I think a couple of the girls were a little bit like, oh yeah, that's going out into the world now. It does kind of feel different when you hear it back or see it back in black and white because the papers have picked up on some stuff. But I mean, we're all just human, aren't we? I mean, I wish being in the public eye, it would make me different. I'm some kind of superhuman that doesn't go through all the same crap as everyone else, but it doesn't.
And had you been in touch with the girls before you started the podcast, since you broke up, or did you have kind of a gap and then you've got in touch and then this has just been something later on down the line?
So since the big reunion, since we did that kind of programme 7 years ago, we've been together since then and we've been gigging. So not in the same capacity we used to do it. We've all got families and young children, so we just gig when we can. So we've been in touch throughout this lockdown, but not enough. And yeah. It was really an excuse to get together and kind of chat more as well and get on. And some people have been brilliant throughout this lockdown with being motivational to the public. But for me now, I just locked down with my family and my kids. My kids are like 9, 10 and 13. And I just kind of locked down with them. And I thought, I'm going to get us through this emotionally. And I sort of shied away from social media a lot. So the second lockdown, it was like, right, let's do something about it. But yeah. We didn't want to do the usual. I come to social media and let's sing like everyone else. It's like, we actually just wanted to give some words of encouragement, I think, within our story. So that's how it came about.
I think a lot of people on the second lockdown and then again on the third, like number one was so nerve-wracking. Like me and my family were talking about it the other day, like when Boris did that first announcement, we were all sat round at the table and all of us were like, and everyone was going, oh my God, I've seen army on the motorway. This is happening. That's happening. The world's going to end. And then the second one, we were like, right, okay, well, I'm going to use my time to try and be a bit healthier this time or do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
And it was kind of mm-hmm. the second ones where Richie and I started like, really thinking, okay, so our businesses are going to change here, so we've got to adapt. And that's when loads of people were like, okay, so maybe the furlough thing isn't going to, you know, last forever and I need to kind of adapt. And it was scary. And now this time, all of us are like, okay, I miss my mates now. I want to go and see my mates. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, big time. I so miss my friends. And I want my freedom back. I want to go and I want to see people and I want to have some fun. I remember on the first lockdown, I remember you're only allowed out once a day as, you know, kind of for your exercise. And we got a puppy early February and I thought, how am I going to get out with the puppy and my children? Because they're going to be in bed when she needs to go out. So I remember sneaking out my back gate, like running the puppy up and down with a tennis ball. 6 a.m. going, there's not many people up. I'll sneak out my back gate and throw a ball up and down and then run in. And I didn't see anyone. But I actually felt so weird. I was like, I'm being a rebel here and breaking the rules. Bringing her puppy for a walk.
But that's what it was like, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Have you got family still over in Ireland?
Not so much, actually. Sinead from the band, she's still in Ireland. And my children's grandparents are over there on the other side, on my ex-husband's side.
And I bet you they haven't seen each other for a year then, have they?
No, we haven't seen each other for a year. And my children's father lives in Australia, so they haven't seen him for a year and 2 or 3 months now either. And oh, I don't know when they're going to let them out because they're really strict on international travel.
We were just talking before we kind of started recording about, like, we're recording this today where everything kind of has opened up. So I ran straight to the salon and got waxed and lasered and everything. It was like the first person at the door, like, help me, I am a gorilla. And, you know, we were talking about, like, what's the first thing you're kind of doing? Because have you got plans now for like going forward for this summer? Have you got like, is there anything, what's the first thing you want to do?
Well, it's so funny. I was talking to my friends the other week saying like, oh my gosh, lockdown is going to lift. What are we going to do? And it's like, probably walk the Wirral Way again like we have for the last year. You know, but I really just want to get away. I want to try and take the kids maybe to Dorset or Cornwall again or something like that for a few weeks. And my mum and dad are in Portugal. So in an ideal world, I'd love to get to see them. That's not looking on the cards just yet, but I really miss mum and dad. So I don't know. Just to see friends. I mean, I know we can get into gardens and have barbecues, although it's snowing today. It's like, I'll still have a barbecue in the snow. I'm not having it anymore. Even in the rain, just bring your umbrellas.
This time last year, we were all in our gardens having an Aperol Spritz at about 11:30 in the morning, cracking the flag.
Yeah.
And today it's bloody snowing and freezing. The car's iced up. I'm like,
mental.
But in a selfish way, I'm having my house done at the moment and they're falling behind. So I was like really happy because I knew I'd be really fuming if everyone was out in the garden. And I was like stuck.
It's nuts, isn't it? Like, I can imagine people are all going to be in the pubs outdoors today anyway. I know they would on the Wirral. It's like that. Grab a blanket, grab your winter coat, put your hat on. We're having a brew. Yeah.
So when did you move over to the Wirral?
I moved over about 5 years ago now.
Such a random place. Like, I thought you'd live in London or, you know, not the Wirral, just around the corner from us.
I know. Well, my eldest sister, Tara, lives on the Wirral and she married a man from the Wirral. So they've lived over here for kind of 15 years. And when I split up with my ex-husband, there was no one in Ireland for me. And I was completely depressed, totally down and out. And I just couldn't get myself back on my feet at all. The kids were really, really young. So she said to me, get yourself over here and I'll help you. And she did. Like, she's been my absolute hero for the first few years. I actually got here just to find my feet again, really, and kind of choose to, I suppose, stand on my own two feet and be free again, because it was really hard for a while.
Well, I remember when, because you'd done Celebrity Big Brother, didn't you?
I did.
It was just after you'd gone through a divorce, wasn't it?
Yes. So I think I had split up with my husband sort of the December the year before, and then I went into the Big Brother house in the September.
Yeah.
Now, I think they had said that I only split up before I went in, but that wasn't the case. But still, all that while later, 9 months, it was still, I was still really struggling.
Yeah.
The kids were tiny. My youngest was only 1.5 at the time. So I just, you know, you spend every moment on the children when they're that tiny. So I couldn't find my own time to heal, I guess. And I remember we have to, with the Big Brother house, you've got to hide away for 5 days before you go into the house. And as soon as I shut the hotel room door to hide, I'd had a total breakdown.
You melt down.
And that was my moment to really cry hard. And it was what I needed, because you stay strong for the children and you can't really cry or break the way you need to.
You say it's what you needed, but it's also, you're in the most vulnerable part, like your life's changed and you're now getting watched by millions, exposing what you're going. That must be quite difficult to then have that realization while the camera's on your face.
Yeah. What was hard for me, I think, was that at that moment, I felt like I had room to reach out to people and have friendships and actually speak openly about how I felt. But because all the cameras are on, I didn't want to do that, because I'm like, this is not me sharing it with just one other person that I'm making friends with. Yeah. It's actually me sharing it with millions, and I didn't want to do it. And a Big Brother used to say, you know, oh, Adele, I can see you're struggling. You know, we're here for you if you want to speak. And I was like, it's not just you here for me. Yeah. There's millions, and I don't want to speak to millions. And I guess I found that hard in the house. I sort of kept myself distanced from the housemates for that reason, because I didn't actually want to speak.
Because you felt like you were on the edge. You were like vulnerable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was private as well. Everything I was going through and the reasons for, you know, our marriage breakdown and stuff were all really private. And I felt like if I became too friendly with someone, I would tell them everything. And I was like, it's just too close and too soon. I didn't want to do that. So
did you enjoy the experience of Big Brother?
Do you know what? I think it was really good for me. Myself and Kelly Maloney at the time, we were both going through huge things in our personal lives. And I feel like we're the ones who got on best in there, because we didn't get involved with all the stupid stuff, because we didn't have the capacity to do that. So where everybody was fighting over who ate the last of the pasta, what have you done with the cereal? I can't believe this. I can't believe that. I just didn't have time for that stuff. So it was entertaining sitting back and watching them. I mean, I remember Frenchie cutting up Leslie's boxer shorts because he pissed her off and stuff. And it was like, these are all mad. Like, I mean, where do you have that? In some ways, I wish I could go back in now in better form, because I'd probably join in with all that stuff and actually put a box of shorts up myself.
Just for a bit of a laugh.
Adele, right, I was laughing because we were listening to your podcast, right? And you said if you weren't going to be a singer, you were going to be a stripper.
Yes.
Right, well, I always wanted to be a singer. And I was actually a stripper.
Were you? That's brilliant.
I feel like we're so alike.
When were you a stripper and what?
I was a butler in the buff. I had a penny and a dicky bow. It was covered. It was just me bum. I was a posh stripper.
Very nice. Do you know what? I don't know what it was. I love the idea of that, you know, like the showgirls thing in America.
Love
so
it.
Not so much the lap dance thing necessarily, but just give me a little, you know, give me a platform and a stage and a pole and I'm yours. Like, you know.
So more Coyote Ugly, less Hustler.
Well, Coyote Ugly was a little bit too keep your clothes on the bar, so not quite that either.
That was a bit too kosher.
Yeah, that's too clothed.
Know what? Me and the girls went to Vegas a few years ago and went to all these like amazing shows. We went to see like the Beatles Cirque du Soleil and all these amazing things. And then one night we were like, do you know what? Let's just go to like a seedy bar off the strip. And we went to a stripper's. And it was the best night by far. But then we ended up getting too drunk.
Such a good
and
night.
Like, you're talking to the girls and they're like, so how did you end up here? And I'm like, just chatting.
Trying to
like,
counsel
them. Give
them
the fucking $10 and get off. And you're like,
I'll pay you $10 to shut up talking to me. Here, get out. But I have a story actually now when you say the strippers in Vegas and stuff. So an ex-boyfriend of mine many moons ago when I was in Bewitched used to work for Cirque du Soleil. He was a lighting designer. And he was in Vegas for He was with Copperfield in Vegas for New Year's. So I went to surprise him one year just after Christmas. So it was 26th or something of December. And when I got to his room, I got his key because I knew his tour manager. So I went into the room and he was in the room and he just kind of stood there staring at me and going, hi. And I was like, surprise. And he was like, you know, just blank faced. And I thought, well, this is a really odd reaction. So he went, I'm just going to go and get some ice. And I was like, what? All right, then. So he left the room to go and get his ice. And then a couple of minutes later, I had this knock on the door. So I opened the door and there's this girl at the door. I was like, oh, hi, how are you doing? And she was like, looks at me funny and says, is Mikey here? I said, well, he's gone to get some ice. She was like, he's gone to get some ice. I thought, no, she thinks it's weird as well. I was like, do you want to come in and wait? And he was like, no, it's OK, I'll go. And I was like, no, come on in and wait. So we were chatting away and I said, listen, I was like, are you on the tour as well? And she said, no, I'm a dancer. And I was like, and then I took a look at her and I thought, ah, right. She had a Mac on, pair of high heels, fishnet stockings. I was like, right. Oh, you're a dancer. I was like, you stripper. And she was just like, yeah. I was like, ah, it's all coming together. So she thought, oh God, she was like, I leave. She was like, why are you here? I said, oh, I'm his girlfriend. I just surprised him. And she's like, I knew I wasn't booked for a couple. I thought, oh Lord. So she's like, get me out of here. And I was like, no, you've got to stay. I was like, you stay. I'll get you your money. How much does he owe you? So I made her come in and she sat in the room and he came. Yeah, I'll get you your money. So he came back in the room and I was like, oh, come on in. And he was like, okay. I was like, come on in. I was like, you know, your friend is around the corner here. And he comes in, he said, oh, who are you? And I was like, who are you? I said, you know exactly who she is. How much does he owe you? She's like $500 or whatever. I said, go on, give her money. And he said like, well, yeah, yeah. He's like, oh no, but like, she's not even doing anything. I was like, I don't care. I was like, she's meant to be doing something. So get her your money. So he takes the money out of the safe and he hands her the money. And then, you know, kind of she walked off and he hung his head in shame.
Hey, I love the way you got her the money. My hero.
Oh God, I totally ditched him. But it was like, I kind of left that night. I was going on holidays to Tobago with Sinead and Keevy afterwards. So I paid an extra £2,000 or something to get on a plane. Straight away and just crying my eyes out leaving Vegas. There's fireworks going in the sky and I'm going, poor me, heading to Tobago, spending 5 days by myself in tears. On reflection, I'm glad anyway, because obviously it wasn't meant to be, but it's a good story to tell.
It's a fucking great story and good on you for being Ever the feminist and getting her own money. Amazing.
You just made me realise I was a cheap stripper because I was 50 quid.
Well, then you wonder as well, because she was going to the hotel room and it was so much money, it was like, was it just stripping or what else was about to happen here? You know, it's like, I have my doubts. So I didn't hear from him for weeks and then he turned up at my house in Ireland then about 3 or 4 weeks later. And I was like, are you having a laugh? And he was like, oh, you know, I'm really sorry. I've come to say sorry. I just wanted to see some tits and ass. And I was like, all right, this is really not helping. And he brought me a little mixtape and all. I was like, oh my God, this is hilarious.
A mixtape makes it all better.
Yeah.
Are you messing?
So I was like, no. Yeah, I said, you need to leave. And he was like, but my flight's not back for 2 weeks. So I was like, I don't give a
shit. You want
to
see tits and arse? You can see my heel. I'd be like, get out.
And I have absolutely no idea whether he stayed in Ireland and went to a hotel or went straight back home. I don't know what he did. I just kicked him out. So
good on you, yeah.
Hi, we're Sound Rebel and we produce this podcast.
We make loads of entertainment shows like this one, but we also make informative and educational podcasts for businesses. We can help with the whole production process from idea development through to podcast distribution to all the major podcast apps like Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Google Podcasts.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Right. Back to the episode.
Joe, when Bewitched first come out, I think you were the most successful ever girl band for number ones in a string, weren't you? One, like back-to-back number ones.
I think we were, unless somebody kind of beat us then after, but I think we were at the time for sure.
But didn't you then go on tour with Justin and Britney as well?
We did. We went on tour with NSYNC. We actually did 3 tours with them, I think. We did. We started off in the kind of sheds, they call them in America, and then we did the arenas, and then we went on to the bigger venues. And Britney was opening for them at the time, so that was a brilliant time.
Oh my God. That is like mind blowing, isn't it? Like, do you just pinch yourself and go, what a life I've had and what
well,
things I've done?
Well, it's really quite funny. Only when you look back at it, because at the time, you know, our manager was like, we've got you this amazing tour in America, you know, an American boy band, way pretty excited. And we were like, oh, the Backstreet Boys. And she goes, NSYNC. And we were like, who? Who are they? You know? Because they weren't big in England. So then we Googled them and thought, oh no, they're all quite ugly actually. So we were gutted. It was like, you're joking. But then actually when you get there, and especially with JT, when you see what he does, and he uses that kind of it factor over and over again, and he is incredibly sexy just being himself. Not necessarily. Now I have to say, I think he's better looking now than he was back then anyway. He's come into his own.
Yeah,
and as a band, they're incredible. So fabulous to watch. So brilliant to work with. Loved all the guys. Their personalities are brilliant. And Brittany was so lovely. Really, really shy at the time.
I was going to say, what was Brittany like?
Really shy. Really shy at the time. And her and Justin were just getting together. So that was all pretty kosher. And they were kind of trying to keep it quiet in the background and stuff like that. But yeah, really, really great time.
You said you've got kids. Would you want your kids to go into the industry?
Do you know, I really don't mind whatever they want to do. And I think if they go into the industry, they'll probably be somewhat safer than maybe I was. Not that I wasn't safe and anything particularly happens, but just having eyes on it and understanding the industry and what people expect of you. And the fact that genuinely about 99% of them are not your friends. They're just there to work for you or rather you're there to work for them, and you come out with 1% of friends. And that was the biggest eye opener for me. Dad told me before I started, he was just like, you know, you're not going to make many friends. They are going to market you, and that's what they're all about. And he was right, because when we were dropped, like I don't even need one hand to count the amount of people I speak to from that time.
Really?
Like literally within a week of being dropped. Like, it's quite amazing.
I mean, I don't feel like Bewitched kind of had it as much, but maybe like women in the industry are like marketed a certain way, and sometimes you can just be like tarred with one brush and that's like you. And like over the especially the last year, so much stuff's come out about like actresses and singers and stuff, and like the Me Too movement and like loads of stuff where women are like, actually no, those guys did used to grab my ass and think it was okay and it wasn't okay. And did you experience that, or do you feel like not as much?
We were really lucky, I have to say, because our marketing was all incredibly innocent and it wasn't sexualized at all. Everybody treated us that way because I think they all, you know, just thought that that's kind of who we were. We came across a hell of a lot younger even than our age. So most people left us alone, and our manager was very good at keeping us safe from all that stuff. So we were lucky. But it just with regards to even people grabbing your ass, never had anyone in the industry. But it used to surprise me how many people would do it just even in clubs and stuff. And you're like, what are you doing? And I never accepted it. I was like, excuse me. And I was like, what are you doing? And he was just like, what do you mean? I was like, that's my ass. Did I ask you to touch it? And he's like, chill out. I was like, no, you chill out.
Mad, isn't it? Don't you think like times have changed so much more recently? Like women will turn around to be like, that is not an okay behavior. Whereas was like more, you know, like a pervy boss at work or something was more like a normal thing. And it was kind of like we normalized it as people to be like, oh, my boss is so creepy, or you drive an instructor strokes your leg, or do you know what I mean? Those type of things that we just spoke about as if like it was all right. And now actually it's like,
who's driving instructor stroke their legs? Was that your driving instructor?
No, mine couldn't bear.
Was it a friend of yours?
But friends of mine.
Oh my God. I'd have kicked him out of the bleeding car.
Women did normalize a lot of that stuff. And now like, people in positions where they can spread a good message or reach out to people, like what you guys have done with your podcast, and turn around to me like, do you know what? I did suffer with depression, or I have gone through this really horrible thing, and this is how it made me feel. It's opened the door for so many more people, especially for like people who are fans of yours are my age. So, you know, it's girls who are my age that loved Bewitched. And then to listen to that, where you, it's these people who you looked up to go and, oh yeah, well, no, but shitty things still happen to you. And, you know, you have to bounce back from things and blah, blah, blah. And like people are like, I'm not an alien because I feel this sadness, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, we all feel like aliens sometimes, don't we? And especially when something huge is going on and we're down or struggling, you kind of think you're the only person in the world, don't you? And you sort of forget we are but a grain of sand on this, in this beach of life.
Yeah.
And everyone else goes through the same things at different points, and nobody gets to get away from it, really, do they? I think it is really important. I think if we speak to each other and we openly communicate with each other, it just makes it easier. I mean, I didn't at the time, and on our last podcast, on the sixth one of this series, I talk about my divorce and what happened and how I sort of felt, and it was a really, really hard time. I mean, I didn't really reach out to my family very much because I didn't want it to reflect on my husband's, and that maybe our relationship wouldn't be able to kind of get through it if everybody was against him and not just me, so to speak. And Gosh, I remember, self-harming myself, punching myself in the head, punching myself everywhere, wanting a drink every morning just to take the edge off, and going through panic attacks and everything, and just not reaching out. And I think on reflection, if I reached out to everyone or anyone even that I knew, I think maybe I could have halved that struggle for myself.
That sounds like you hit pretty much rock bottom. So how did you claw yourself back from that?
I think firstly, having the children really, really helped, because I had to get up in the morning and I had to get them dressed and I had to feed them and I had to keep going. And then secondly, I didn't like feeling that way. I don't like it feeling that way. I don't. And it's a real drug almost, isn't it? When you feel really down like that or really negative, it just keeps coming at you. And it's almost the more difficult choice is to make the choice not to feel that way anymore or do something to not feel that way anymore. Yeah. But that was my kind of light. I was like, I have to get to that light. I have to get to that position on not feeling this way anymore. I just don't accept to live this way anymore. But it took a while. It took quite a while. And I think Big Brother was the first chance for me to catch a breath. I came home with a new perspective, I think, and thought like, no, that is it now. That is it. I choose me. I choose whatever choices are going to actually step me and the children forward out of this position and not stay in that limbo land. I was like, that's just not doing anything. I need to make a huge decision. And I chose myself at that point, and that's when the change started to happen. Just little choices for myself and not struggling to try and keep our marriage, maybe our marriage safe, or I suppose we weren't married again at that point, but just even keep our relationship safe or keep our secrets of what happened safe and all. I was like, it's just not enough is enough now. I don't know who I'm trying to protect here, but I'm definitely not protecting myself. So I need to be more open and make choices towards myself.
This last year has been so hard for so many people. Do you have any tips for anyone who might be in a similar position or might be feeling really low about something?
Honestly, my first tip would definitely be to speak to someone. And if you're afraid to speak to someone, reach out, call the Samaritans, or there's plenty of places online if you feel like you can't reach out to someone you know first. But that is the first step. It's getting to getting support and actually speaking out, and sometimes admitting it to yourself or saying it out loud or even writing it down. You write everything down a million times over just to get it out of your system. Or, God, scream and shout if you have to, punch a few pillows and stuff, It's just to get it out, because when you hold it all in, it all snowballs and it becomes even worse. I mean, I remember I was so stressed at a point, my head was simulating seizures. I remember driving with the children in the car one day, and I was stopped at a red light. Luckily, the car was stopped. But my head was like, when the computer screens used to shut down and you'd see all of these little bits kind of come together on the screen, and then it would just go blank with a flat line and then disappear. That happened in my head, and I thought, whoa, and I couldn't see anything, and I just flatlined and blacked out, and I was sitting in the car at the light with the kids, and I was like, that was such a panic for me. But that all, I went through many, many tests. I had to stay up for 48 hours, and they, gave me head tests, and I had everything I could have, and it ultimately came down to stress. Stress is literally the worst offender, I think, that happens. And, you have to find a way of relieving that stress. If that is speaking out, if it's screaming, if it's shouting, if it's talking to someone, if it's writing it all down, if it's going for a run, some people, find kind of exercise really good to get rid of stress.
I was going to say, if you found that exercise has helped you get through this.
Well, for me, so at those early stages, because I had the three young children and I was now a single parent, I actually couldn't find the time to do that and get out, but I would have loved it. Definitely would have helped, like just to hit the ground running, I think, or a punch bag even at home, I guess, works, doesn't it? Meditation is my thing, yoga and meditation. I've got a yoga therapist from True Yoga in London, Colin Dunsmore, and ever since I've met him, my life has really turned around. He's just really taught me how to see things from a different perspective, and I study yoga and I study all the, the history of yoga and where it all comes from, etc., not just the positions, and it's made a massive difference in my life.
Yeah.
It really did. And especially with this whole process and this pandemic, I have religiously got up and I have done my yoga and my meditation for an hour every morning and 45 minutes in the evening. And it just keeps you grounded, and it keeps me sane, and it keeps me in the position of always choosing the moment, because things can get too big when you look out too far. So you just have to take it back to the moment, don't you? And live every moment
100%.
By moment. And with those in front of your face as well. Your life only needs to be you where you are and right in front of you or the people around you. Sometimes you can look out too far, and that's where it's really hard with social media, because we can actually get to the whole world now. Sometimes our issues just feel as big as the whole world, but it's like you just got to zone it all back into your almost address And then everything is so much smaller when you contain it in your own address with your own people for a period of time. Like, you know, in some ways I always think, and I was just like, why did we ever discover that there was someone else over the water? That just made it harder. Yeah. It's like, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's so much easier when you just stick to your postcode, because life, everything is smaller. Issues are smaller. Life is smaller. But then love is bigger because you can see it in front of you and you're not reaching out too far wanting more. And I think, I hope this pandemic has taught so many of us.
100% it has.
You know, I really hope that everyone can bring that forward, knowing to live in the moment, or just that you have everything you need on your doorstep, because we do. We do. Yeah. We just want more sometimes.
But it is funny. I think we're just naturally instilled to worry, because the amount of people now who are worrying about, at the beginning, they were worrying about lockdown. And now they've adjusted to lockdown. They worry about coming out of lockdown and going back to original. It's like, I feel like we're just trained to constantly worry. And it's about, like you say, just go and just stop worrying, just chill out and just do what you're doing right now and enjoy where you are, isn't it?
You just got to be, don't you? It's like just getting to that place and just being and just go with the flow. And if that flow is negative today, then roll with the negative flow, whatever. Just go with the river of it.
You do songwriting as well, don't you? So if you've had loads of time at home, you must have wrote some smash hits, right? Like over the last year.
Oh my gosh. I'd love to think so, but actually I've been so uninspired by this whole thing. You know, right at the beginning, and I was like, oh yes, I'll finally write my solo album and I'll get it all done. And I've been so uninspired completely. Like in that respect, I've done absolutely nothing. I know it sounds awful. I've written tons of songs over the years and I've loads of songs in the bottom of my wardrobe, so to speak. But I need to just kind of crack down and right now, from my perspective now and who I am now.
So is that a goal for you to do your own solo album, is it?
Yeah, I really want to. I mean, it will probably not be in the same capacity that Bewitched was and stuff, because the industry is so different anyway. And I have three young kids and I like being with them. But it is something I've wanted to do for years. And I wrote a solo album many moons ago when Bewitched first finished, when I wrote for the likes of the Sugar Babes and that, because I worked with Xenomania. But the industry just, they had me trapped in a box and wouldn't let me out. So I saw the record companies and I saw the managers and they were all like, this album is absolutely amazing. I would definitely want something to do with it. They were like, but how do we market this from Edel from Bewitched? So I just got stuck in the end because nobody could move forward with me because I was Edel from Bewitched. But I'm always going to bloody be here. So I've just got to let myself out of the box and do it on a different level. So that's what I'm going to do.
I think that would feel so liberating, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And I think now as well, I suppose when you're coming off the back of Bewitched at that point, everybody, including myself, maybe expects that if you do something else by yourself, it's got to be at the same level and at the same capacity we did it. But like all these years later now, I know it doesn't. I just need to do it for me and enjoy myself and put it out there. And whoever wants to enjoy it can. And whoever doesn't, doesn't.
Have you ever thought, because you watch like The Voice and you've got like people who were in Liberty X, people from big bands back in the same time, similar to you, who have gone on to these shows to get another like step up into the industry. Have you ever considered doing something like that or?
Not so much, you know. I mean, I always said about myself, if I ever did any of those competitions, I can't imagine I'd be one of the winners, to be honest. And that's why I always said to people years ago, don't let somebody be the judge of whether you're capable of something or not. You need to judge yourself on that. Because I really don't think I would win those competitions. So, but it's true, isn't it? And there's so many artists out there that aren't very good singers, but their personality and their entertainment value is so much bigger than their singing. It doesn't matter. And we all get everything that we need from them.
Yeah.
So no one else should be the judge of what we do at all. You know,
get
somebody's kind of input, if you like, but don't let them tell you whether you're going to be the one or not to do it.
Yeah.
Hell no. Forever, I remember I wanted to be a singer, but I didn't start voicing that till I was about 12 or 13. And everyone I said it to was always like, oh, don't be so stupid now. What's a real job? Or, well, you're not good enough. You're not anything special. You can't do that. And
I
never bothered listening. Yeah, like from most people that I would have said it to, not in my family. Mom and Dad were brilliant. And they always said, no matter what we said we wanted to do, they were like, great, go and do it then. Go and figure it out. But everyone else, and even teachers or, you know, the teachers that are kind of helping you, your career guidance and stuff, everyone just told you how ridiculous you were being. Or even friends or friends' parents, you're not special enough. You just meet it all the time, but you just have to have your own belief.
And there's always going to be someone who thinks someone's better, or there's always going to...
Always.
Like, that's just life.
Exactly. And there is always someone better, but it doesn't matter.
But it's about the confidence in yourself and what you can do and the drive that you, like, for how much you want it to make it happen.
Exactly. And it's like, again, it's just like looking too far about what it is that you want. Like the girls and I got together and, you know, we didn't really ever think about, will we go to London? Will we get a manager? Will we get a record company? We just did it every day as it went along, and all the boxes just started to tick along the way. And even when C'est La Vie came out that week, we were just hoping for maybe a top 40 record innocently. And during the week, Ray said, C'est La Vie is number one. And we were like,
you're like, what the?
What? Didn't even know how to compute that. It was like, number one, what? Like, what are you talking about? You know? And he was like, number one in the sales and stuff. And we thought, that is absolutely ridiculous. I don't even know where to put that. It was very hard to compute, you know?
That is unbelievable.
When we were younger, it was that you used to go to like HMV and you'd buy your CDs and you'd get CDs for Christmas and, you know, you'd get albums for Christmas. Are you happy that you were so famous at a time of big pop culture and people would go to shows more and people bought records, actual physical records, then everything kind of just being a bit more isolated and people just streaming something on their own at home?
Yeah, thrilled, to be honest. And it's so not what it used to be. And I even miss going to a record store now to buy the records I like. In some ways, it's great that we have it at the tip of our fingers just to download it in a second. But it was like, it just takes that enjoyment out of it, doesn't it? Or being excited. You know, I've saved my pennies when I was younger and I'm going to the shop and I'm going to pick my records. And I used to always go to Abbey Discs, I think it was called, and sift through all the ones that were on sale and pick out all the kind of records that were used to be B-sides, but now are on vinyl, or they've moved all those things around and you just don't get that anymore. It's like, ah.
It's even like buying the smash hits with all the lyrics in. You'd be able to sing all the words.
Yeah. I also used to love going to Woolworths and seeing my own record on the shelf. Yeah. I was like, woohoo, there I am.
Yeah.
Whilst robbing the pick and mix at the same time. I used to do that, rob the pick and mix.
So that's what you used to do.
I robbed that blind when I was a kid.
Imagine front of the Daily
Mirror. It's all coming out.
Adele bewitched, looking at her own single, robbing the pick and mix.
That wasn't me that said that. I was robbing my own single. I was like, that's
I was robbing my own single.
I'm not paying for that.
Adele, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us.
Oh my gosh, it's been amazing. Call me again.
I don't say that.
We'll come over to the wheel.
I'm your new stalker. Wait there, sorry, my signal's going. I'm just going through the Mersey tunnel. I'm on my way.
Well, I'm in London, so off you go.
Adele, thank you so much, babe. It's been amazing.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely, actually, you guys. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Babe, can you believe we've finished recording series 4, is it?
I really enjoyed that episode as well. You know, like when we were younger, like Bewitched was such a big deal. And like we've had so many of those moments over this series where we've reached back into our young years and be like, oh my God.
Well, do you know what, Bewitched, that no matter where you go, C'est La Vie, it's at a party, a wedding, bongos, wherever you go, it comes on. It is like the Paddy's Day tune, isn't it? You'd have a ball, you just literally, you grab your drink, you dance around, you're like, it takes you back to being a kid. But we've also had... we've had the Spice Girls on. Like, I can't even believe. Like, I look back at our last 8 weeks and I'm like, how the fuck have we done this?
I know. I feel like as soon as we can go out and have a bevy, we need to be celebrating. If we name this series, we should call it Fangirling.
Well, do you know what, right? Who was it we were talking about? It was Chizoe from The One, when she said about you have all these moments and it's like, you can't even go out and go, oh my God, I was in Vogue. Oh my God, we had a Spice Girl. It's like, let's log off and then you're back in your quiet house. But do you know what? You've got to also go. Without lockdown, we probably wouldn't have had this opportunity. That's what's brought it all.
Exactly.
So you go, you just got to take it and go fucking made up.
You take the good with the bad, and like the last 12 months has been, there's been so many ups and downs. And ironically, we're recording this episode on the day that everything starts to open up again and life kind of comes back. And here we are at the end of our series. That's been the thing for you and me to get through everything that we've done. So it's really nice now that as the world opens back up that we can kind of close our series off and we're like, okay, what did you do with lockdown? Well, we made a fucking unreal podcast series, babe. What did you do?
Do you know what I mean? We created a new online business. We've had the best series of a podcast ever. We do what? We have smashed our lockdown. It's been tough at times.
And we've both gained and lost half a stone so many times.
But you know what? Honestly, I swear down, I look and I go, having the structure of doing this podcast every week, it was something that got me through. We got to research about people. We got to chat to people. We kept social, like social skills were needed. And there was times, I'm not going to lie, I found it tough talking to people when you're struggling yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
But there's people who haven't spoke to anyone for a year hardly. And you go, we're just being so lucky, babe.
I know. So I'll see you, my love, in the beer garden.
Oh, yes.
Woo-hoo! We're on the bennies.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like Newsjacking with Dan and Katie.
Hello, my name's Dan.
Hiya, I'm Katie.
And we are back with our brand new podcast, Newsjacking. Is that what we're calling it?
That's what we're going with, yeah. Not to be mistaken for news jerking.
No, we did talk about news jerking, didn't we?
Posh Bem, the producer, can you confirm the name of our podcast? Is it Newsjacking or News Jerking?
No, we're going Newsjacking.
Okay. Better cancel those t-shirts I got ordered then.
We should probably explain what newsjacking is.
Yeah, what is newsjacking anyway?
Siri, what's newsjacking?
Newsjacking. The practice of taking advantage of current events or news stories as a way of promoting or advertising your own product or brand.
So essentially what you're saying is we're talking about other people's news as a way of drawing attention to our own new podcast.
Basically, yeah. It's shameless, but it's I'm hoping it will be effective.
So that's News Jerking with Dan and Katie. Going to be starting...
Jacking.
That's News Jacking with Dan and Katie. Yeah. You can find us now in your podcast app.
News Jacking with Dan and Katie. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram @DanandKatie.